You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
To the From the Shadows podcast. I'm your host, Shane Grove, and with me again, this is three in a row, is the super producer, Jason.
Greetings, everyone.
So Jason, now you're back into it here. You're feeling good. Are you sorry you came back? Are you still glad that you were able to recover and come back?
Oh, I am so grateful to be back, and never wanted to leave in the first place, but under the circumstances, I didn't have no choice, and it's good to be back. I love being able to get a hold of our fans and all the other people that support the podcast, and it's just a good feeling. Good to be back.
Yeah, it was great. It was great to see all the comments here after the last episode of everybody glad that you were healthy and back on the show. So that was kind of cool to see. So, before we get started with the episode though, I do want to remind everybody, if you have a story and you want to come on and hang out with me and Jason, you can find us at From the Shadows podcast on Facebook or After the Shadows, our forum page on Facebook. Find me at Shane Grove Author on Instagram, our From the Shadows Instagram page, or just the good old standby, come to the From the Shadows podcast website and hit the contact button, send us an email, and we'll have you on the show. Our guest tonight, though, okay, and we kind of joked around a little bit before, I'm almost ashamed to have an Instagram handle that says Shane Grove Author when we're going to talk to our guest here on this episode, Jason. I don't think I should be allowed to put author at the end of my name when we compare to this gentleman. What do you I mean?
I agree with you 100%.
Now before we bring on our distinguished guest, it's Mr. Timothy Renner from the Strange Familiar podcast. Timothy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I not to be confused with and Jason, I had to set Jason straight. We weren't having Jeremy Renner on to talk about the new Hawkeye movie.
I love that guy for one reason. Well, two reasons. Number one, I'm a superhero nerd, so
me too.
But number two, no one could pronounce my name right before, And then once he started doing Avengers movies, suddenly everybody can pronounce my last name. I got Reiner, everything else but Renner. And then he got popular. I was like, yes. So now people can pronounce my name.
Yeah.
But you know what? You know what? Maybe he felt the same way until Strange Familiars became so huge. And then you became such a well-known author. So maybe he felt the same. That guy that does the podcast, you know, everybody got my name wrong until the, you know. So
Avengers probably a little bit more well-known than Strange Familiars at this point. But we'll see what we can do about that.
Okay, Timothy, but I got to say one thing. You've been on Coast to Coast AM. He has not.
I have indeed.
There you go. There you go.
And let's be honest, I'm not a superhero comic book nerd like, you know, you guys are, self-proclaimed. But Hawkeye is not one of the biggest names. I mean, come on.
Oh, come on now.
He's like sixth or seventh best. I mean, come on. Even I know that.
No, I can tell you didn't read many comic books.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry. But so what's kind of cool is that we have actually been having some Strange Familiars promos on our show the last couple weeks. And so it might seem surreal for our loyal listeners to have. I mean, hopefully they don't think this is just one big promo for Strange Familiars, but yes.
It's called syncretic marketing. Right.
Yes. Yes. Whatever it's called. But the reason, like, I was so excited when I saw like some of the people we could do some cross promotion with was I have loved every time you're on with Wes on Sasquatch Chronicles. It is, I don't want to say you bring the level of, you know, great research up on the show. I mean, come on, Wes slacks a little bit. But you are fantastic on the show. And I'm just teasing about Wes. He's great.
So, you know, the odd thing is a lot of revelations I've had, Wes has come to and he said on the show, and I've thought, like, you know what? He's right about that. And then I'll kind of do, you know, dive in a little bit further and, you know, write it up in a book or something and basically you bring it to Wes. And by that point, he's done, you know, 200 more shows or whatever. And he's forgotten he's actually said it before I actually wrote about it. And I'm like, no, Wes, I actually got this from you. So Wes has been an important part of my journey, not just for having me on the show, but his journey in Bigfoot, I think, is one of the more interesting ones out there as well. If you listen to his early shows where he, you know, called anybody that talked about anything even remotely strange, a flute player, to now where he has really kind of embraced the strangeness of the phenomenon. It's a really, really interesting and I feel like an honest journey. And yeah, I'm a huge fan of Wes's and I just love the guy. So
yeah, he's done great things for us. I mean, he promotes us as much as he can. And I don't want to say that he's a fan, but he's not a hater of us. He must appreciate what we're doing or else he wouldn't put links to our shows up on his site and stuff. So I kind of think that's kind of a badge of honor that he thinks enough of us to do that. And, you know, and we're kind of, and I'll look and we're right along there with Strange Familiars and the Paranormal Portal and a couple of the other ones. It's like, what do we deserve that? You know, but I think it's because we all kind of take our own approach to the subject. And it's like you said, it's an honest approach. Mm-hmm. And we listen to everybody because I just think you can learn from everybody that you cross paths with. You know,
absolutely, yes. So, yeah, I think that we show a passion for it, and with everybody having a different perspective with the shows, but yet we all show a passion for the Bigfoot phenomenon or anything that's strange, cryptids in general. I think that he appreciates that.
Well, I appreciate. So, Timothy, why don't you share with our listeners how you started your journey down this path of becoming an author and a podcaster and just talking about everything that's strange yet familiar.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a lifetime passion for me, quite honestly. When I was little, I was lucky enough to grow up in what I call the golden age of Bigfoot. I was born in 1970, so Patterson Gimlin film had been filmed, 3 years before that. And In Search Of came on when I was a kid. And it was kind of the Bigfoot hit the pop culture. Legend of Boggy Creek came out and Bigfoot was on the $6 Million Man, and all that kind of stuff was happening as I was a kid. So if you were interested in, monsters, here was this monster that was supposed to be real, people were seeing it, and completely fascinating to me and excited me as a kid. And at the same time, I was, hearing about ghost stories and stuff. And I didn't know this was called folklore when I was a kid. It just sounded like cool stuff to me. So somebody would tell me about a ghost story and, there's a ghost that people saw on this road. And, I'd have to go and, get on that road and visit that road and be the place where the ghost was. I always wanted to go to these places. It wasn't good enough just to hear the story. If it was supposed to be a true story, I wanted to go to the place where it happened. Didn't know that later in life that would become my job. It started early on when I was a kid. I'm sure I used to bug the heck out of my parents. I want to go here. I want to go here. And, they said there's a ghost here. It was, I don't know if it was encouraged by them, but it wasn't discouraged. I wasn't told not to do it, but I don't think my parents saw it as anything other than, passing interest of a child, but it stuck with me. And as I grew older, I kind of lost interest when I found girls when I was a teenager and stuff, but after that, came back to it as an adult and started looking into stuff. Had the internet, typed in Bigfoot one day after not having thought about it for years and years, and all of a sudden, this whole world opens up. It's like, wow, there's a lot of information out there. And, kind of became more and more interested, and it started building over time. And I had written an article for a friend of mine, published a magazine called Morbid Curiosity. That was all true stories. She'd have true stories about people who were like maybe somebody's a grave digger, and they'd write, a true story about their job or something, or a true ghost story or something, this whole variety. It was all true stories. And I had been doing illustrations for her, and she asked me, she's like, well, do you have any stories? And I was like, well, yeah, there's this story of this Hex Hollow here where I live in York County, which is a hex murder. A so-called hex murder. A guy was a local, he's a powwow guy, which is a local form of folk magic and kind of like faith healing and stuff. And one thing led to another, and he basically got accused of hexing these people, and they went down. They ended up killing the poor guy, and it became this kind of local case of infamy. They call it the hex murder, and where he was killed, they call Hex Hollow and stuff. So I wrote a little story about that. And I wrote a couple other articles as well for over time. And that kind of started my writing career. And the people who did the Weird USA, Weird Pennsylvania, they did the weird books for every state. They read that article on Hex Hollow and they contacted me and said, hey, can we print this in the Weird Pennsylvania book? And I said, sure. At the time, they had done just a little magazine called Weird New Jersey. They weren't, a huge publishing venture. So I thought this was going to be like a, self-published book. That's just a little thing. And at the same time, they said, hey, there's this place called, Toad Road that's near you. Will you take some photographs of it? And I said, yeah, I'll do that. And I said, but please let me see the article before you publish it, because there's a lot of nonsense published about Toad Road. And, I really, like to see what you're going to print before you print it. Well, they didn't consult me at all, and they printed this story off the internet. It was basically a bunch of nonsense. So it was cool to be published in their book, to have a story in it and have a bunch of photographs in the book. But at the same time, I was like, oh, they did not get the story right for Toad Road. And I thought, one day I'm gonna correct that. And I started writing, which would be a magazine article. I didn't know where it was going to be published. But I thought it was going to be an article, and it ended up turning into my first book. It just exploded into my first book, which is Beyond the Seventh Gate, which starts out correcting this false story about the place, and then ends up finding all the other weird stuff that happened around it and other weird stuff in the area, and just became this, so that was the beginning of my writing career, sort of correcting something from the Weird Pennsylvania and Weird USA books.
So for everybody that maybe that's where you grew up, was Pennsylvania then. And that's
I grew up in Northern Maryland. But I had moved.
Oh, Northern. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a stone's throw away from York County, where I live now. But I moved here my young adulthood.
And so it appears Pennsylvania has got some really crazy stuff that has gone on there. I mean, when I'm looking through your books, you do have at least two, right? That kind of focus on stuff in Pennsylvania.
Well, I have so my first book was Beyond the Seventh Gate. That was the one I was talking about. I did a follow-up to that called Don't Look Behind You, which is kind of more witnesses came forward, and I found more history about the area, Toad Road, that I wrote about in that first book. So I had enough for a second book. So that's, more on that area. And then my most recent book is called The Witch Cloud, which has to do with haunted bridges in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, more or less. It's kind of more than that. And then I have a book, Bigfoot in Pennsylvania, as well, which is historical articles. So yeah, there's plenty in Pennsylvania.
And it seems like as far as Bigfoot goes, there's a lot of Bigfoot activity in Pennsylvania. See. Because we grew up, Jason and I grew up the same era that you grew up. Okay. And so growing up, I don't think for a second I ever thought that there was Bigfoot in Ohio. And you probably didn't think the same. You probably thought the same thing about Maryland, Pennsylvania area, right? That it was just something in the North Pacific Northwest.
For the most part. Yeah. I remember I had heard a couple stories that somebody had seen Bigfoot in Maryland when I was growing up, but it was it was doubted so much that, the same way it would be today. But at the time I didn't, you're just a kid. You can't suss out what's going on really. And I think that the general theory was like, oh no, it must be a hoax because Bigfoot's from California and Oregon and Washington State. It's not, it's not on the East Coast. So yeah, for the most part, Bigfoot was something that was out West, when I was a kid.
Of course, the longer we've done the podcast, the more stories we've gotten from Ohio that aren't just last week, that happened 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
When we'd have been growing up, and it's like, wow, how cool would that have been to have the ability to know those stories back then as a kid,
if we had the internet, that would have made all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. I think the internet blew things open for this stuff. It's so much, before that you were just, you're really kind of tied into whatever you could find locally, whatever was in the library, whatever they happened to print in the papers. But the internet has made it so easy for people to get in contact with podcasts like us, like you, mm-hmm. like Wes, but every other place too, Facebook groups on Bigfoot, you name it, just people everywhere coming out of the woodwork.
If we just eliminated everything else off the internet but Bigfoot, it would be the perfect tool. let's just be honest. And it is, and I've heard from a lot of people, a lot of researchers, that the genesis of their diving headfirst into it was when they, like you, typed in Bigfoot for the first time on that search engine, on AOL or something, and it's like, wow, there's already Bigfoot groups, mm-hmm. And people sharing stories. I just didn't have, I mean, who has cool friends that have a magazine called Morbid Curiosity? I mean, I didn't have any cool friends like that. I mean, that you have to look back at that and say, as far as like an opportunity to do something you loved I'm guessing at fairly early age, had to be a blessing. Is when you look to where you are now.
Certainly, yeah, and I think you know, I was doing so much artwork that I had a one foot in the door anyway. So, you know, I think that anybody who was a friend of mine that did anything like an independent publication like that was pretty much going to hit me up for artwork anyway, which I was happy to do, by the way. I was always I love to get stuff published. My brother did a skate fanzine when I was like 14 or something, and he let me draw the cover, like, you know, he just Xeroxed it or whatever and stapled it together. But that was like my first, you know, published work, and I remember him like showing me this, my drawing on the cover of this thing, and, you know, I was hooked right then. I was like, I want to do this, you know. It was absolutely amazing. So I've always kind of been involved in that like self-publishing world, I guess, as a result of that.
That's pretty awesome. But so you've always had an interest in this, and you said you kind of like went out and maybe visited some places as a young kid and tried to follow up on some of the stories you heard. But when did you first experience anything, or have you experienced anything? Am I just assuming?
Oh, no, I see, the weird thing was I had some like just weird kind of UFO stuff when I was a kid, and I wasn't that interested in it. I mean, I was interested in it. It was cool, but it took me, you know, years and years to kind of come around to it. When the earliest thing I remember was my mom, I lived on a farm in Northern Maryland. My mom woke me up when I was like 8. And one night she's like, "Hey, you want to see a UFO?" I was like, what 8-year-old kid is going to say no to that, right? Heck yeah, I want to see a UFO. And I remember she took me outside, and one of my brothers, I was the youngest of 6, one of my brothers and my sister was out there and just staring at this UFO over top the trees on the horizon. It was pretty amazing. Now, there is a weird aspect of the story that everyone else went inside. They got bored, and I wanted to stay out and watch it. So I stayed out. And I know people hear that and they think, oh, 8-year-old kid. It wasn't that unusual for me to be out. Like, I had a very protective dog, and, you know, it was just, we lived on a farm. There wasn't anybody around. Nothing was going to hurt me, you know? So it's kind of like, okay, you know, come in when you're done looking at this thing. I don't remember how I got back inside. My next memory is staring at this UFO from inside the house from a window. So I could have just forgotten how I got inside. You know, it was a long time ago, or something. Going on there?
I was gonna say, was this an abduction that you don't remember, and we're going to make a breakthrough right now? Where you? That's kind of. I just can't imagine a parent saying, "Hey, come on out. Let's." You know, let's see a UFO and then just come back inside when you're
see. And my mom was she was different, because I've always been into, you know, weird stuff and, you know, horror and, you know, drew nothing but skulls and horror stuff and monsters and everything. And she was very, you know, very much, on the surface, she wanted everything to be respectable. So, you know, I wanted to, you know, wear horrible, ugly skull T-shirts and everything. And she was appalled by that. At the same time, she was a huge Stephen King fan. She got every Stephen King book, like, first printing the minute it came out. And I remember just thinking, like, Mom, like, come on. Like, you're the Stephen King head. And you're coming down on me for liking all these skulls and all this horror stuff. But it was kind of like about appearances for her, but I never got to ask her. By the time I started like really getting seriously into the stuff where I was documenting cases and writing books and stuff, she had MS, and she had progressive MS, so she ended up in a nursing home at a pretty young age, and she wasn't really kind of with it enough to talk about. So I never really did get to ask her, like, hey, why did you take me outside as a little kid? Why did you wake me up? Was that, you know, had you seen UFOs before? What's the deal with all that? I do remember seeing an orb, what we called a will-o'-the-wisp, in the backyard one night. And I remember getting my mom and saying, what is that? What's that down there? Because I knew it wasn't a firefly. It was too big to be a firefly. And she very casually said, oh, that's a will-o'-the-wisp. And she was so matter-of-fact about it that I didn't think there was anything strange about it at all until much, much later. You know, so I started reading about will-o'-the-wisps and stuff later in life. And wow, she was very casual about that. Now, I don't know if she was saying that just to make sure I didn't get scared as a kid, or if she, again, if she had seen them before or what, but I think there was more to my mom than I knew. And like I said, by the time I was getting to the point where I was, you know, seriously into this stuff, to the point where I'm asking everybody I know, you know, has anything weird happened to you? It was too late to ask mom. So that's a mystery for the ages.
Oh, that's a shame for sure, because it sounds like she was kind of cool.
Very cool, like, mom. Yeah,
maybe way, you know, way cooler than you even realized at the time.
Yeah, I think sure. She might have seen some stuff. I don't know.
She might have been like, when you're describing this, all I can think of is Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and that's like, you know, how he was obsessed and he knew what was going on, and it's that time frame. And I picture you as that little kid on Close, you know, where all the toys were going nuts in that one scene. That's what I picture from the 70s is you just wandering out on the farm, you know, and then here's the aliens trying to get you back out there by, you know, setting all the toys off and you crawling out the doggy door after the. that's what I'm picturing. So.
Yeah, but I, you know, as an adult, I look back on that and I was like, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Bigfoot. I love Bigfoot. And here I actually saw a UFO. I didn't have any, I look back and I'm glad I didn't have anything happen in the woods. I spent my whole childhood in the woods. Nothing weird ever happened to me that I can recall in the woods when I was a kid. And, you know, I was obsessed with Bigfoot and here this UFO thing happens. And I was kind of like, oh, that's neat. And then really didn't. You know, I wasn't reading books about UFOs like I was reading books about Bigfoot as a kid.
Yeah, I remember that, you know, that time I was doing the same thing. And I've said before, you know, every time this weekly reader book or those scholastic book things would come out, and I'd get anything on like the Bermuda Triangle, any of the ghost stuff and the Bigfoot stuff. And it was like, man, I would have just done anything for that to happen to me as a kid. And now as an adult, I'm like, God, thank God it didn't happen to me as a kid. I'd really be screwed up.
I've had some experiences. I've had some experiences in the woods as an adult that have made me like, nothing's going to keep me from the woods, but I've taken a break from the woods for a few weeks as an adult.
Well, if that happened
to me as a kid, I would have been crushed because I spent every minute I could out in the woods.
Well, I remember as a kid where I grew up and we still live in the same area, really rural Ohio, and you didn't even hardly see a deer. Okay. And it was like, they just weren't that common. And I'm thinking, is that why Bigfoot didn't make it to Ohio in the 70s like that? Because we didn't have the deer population that we do now? Because the deer population is ridiculous in Ohio, as I'm sure it is in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
And so I wonder if that, since that food source has become so abundant, that's why, you know, there's so many sightings in Pennsylvania and Ohio. I wonder that. I mean, you're the researcher. Why am I wondering? You probably know.
I'm going to be the very unpopular guy who's like, I'm so not a flesh and blood guy at this point where I'm just like, I don't think that matters. Not that they don't eat. Because I mean, they eat. Obviously, people have seen them eating. They, you know, they eat. But yeah, I think I don't know. And also, I think there probably was a lot more sightings in Ohio than you ever knew. You know, it's just.
Yeah, that's what I believe now. I believe there probably was a lot of sightings. Yeah. We just didn't hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people didn't. Most certainly didn't talk about it. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, we think it really has, and that, and the blessing with the, like I said, the internet and podcasts and stuff is, it is way more mainstream. Like I don't get any flack for what we do. People want to just hear stories, you know. It's like I can imagine 20 years ago, people like, you're just wasting your time talking right. to people about that stuff, and now it's like, okay, what's the best story you've been told that you couldn't put on the air, or,
right.
you know, what about this, you know, this story, what's the extra part of that, you know? So I think it has really brought it to the forefront and allowed more people to feel comfortable to tell their stories. But absolutely. I'm curious, what then made you become less of a flesh and blood and more of a, I guess, for lack of more of a paranormal person when it comes to, because I'm not going to say the word woo, but mm-hmm. oh wait, you just did. I'm sorry.
I'm reclaiming that, so it's not a dirty word anymore. So
okay, so what? How did that transformation, if that's what I can call it, come into being in your career as a researcher?
Yeah, I mean, I started out as flesh and blood as everybody else. You know, it's the logical place to start, I think. But over time, the more information I got, and especially in Pennsylvania, especially in the part of Pennsylvania I live, you know, I started getting accounts, a lot of witnesses contacting me. I've seen this thing all times a year. They're seeing them, you know, and sometimes in places that aren't very remote at all. And it's made me think, like, well, what's going on here? Like, if there's a breeding population, we should be able to find them. So that was a big aspect of it. Another thing is witnesses. So talking with witnesses, and I never blame a hunter who sees one, you know, like walk under their tree stand or something, or a roadside witness, you know, they see one cross the road in front of them or something. They're very, very sure it's a real animal when they see him. And I never blame them for thinking that. They'll, you know, a lot of times they'll just tell you straight up, nope, it's just an animal. It's just an animal. And they're sure of it because what they saw looked like and acted like an animal for sure. But when you talk to these witnesses who have repeat encounters, like people have them come on their property, I won't say always, but it often gets very, very weird. And they'll start talking about strange lights in the woods that accompany them. They'll talk about poltergeist activity in their house. They'll talk about hearing weird voices, sometimes, you know, in English, sometimes in an unknown language. They start talking about all this other weird stuff along with Bigfoot. And that was a huge part of it for me. It was like, okay, there's something more going on here. So that was it for me. And then another big part of it is I hang out with some guys who are really, really into foraging. Some of them, like my main research partner, Chad, and my other, he's on the podcast. He's my sometimes research partner, John. Those guys are huge into foraging. They're the guys you want to be with if you get stuck in the woods. You know, they'll find you something to eat. And both of them were like, yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know what, you know, if they're eating, that's a big animal and they got to eat a lot. And again, this is based on, you know, around here. Like when you get to the woods in the Pacific Northwest, we're talking about a different landscape. And we're talking about an area with true wilderness. So, you know, I do leave a possibility of there being, you know, a natural creature out there. But as time goes on, that possibility, that window gets, you know, smaller and smaller for me. I don't know what they are. I don't necessarily know that it's paranormal. That's a good word for it, because it's whatever it is, it's so far beyond a natural animal in its abilities. And if it is something that evolved, it has so many advantages that other creatures don't have, evolutionarily speaking, that it might as well be paranormal. You know, it's so outside of anything other animals can do that, you know, it's beyond our understanding. So if it's not paranormal, it might as well be.
Yeah, true. That's true. There doesn't seem to be, in our definition of normal, much normal about it. You know what I'm saying? So, but I'm curious, the poltergeist activity. So people are experiencing these creatures on their property, seeing them, and then there's poltergeist activity in the house, or is the poltergeist activity a precursor to them seeing?
It can go either way. It can honestly go either way. If you look at what that people call Class B stuff in the woods, Class B Bigfoot encounters, think about what they are. We're talking about stones being thrown. We're talking about bad smells. We're talking about unknown language, or, you know, growls and things like that. Mm-hmm. Footsteps from something unseen. These are all poltergeist activity. This is all poltergeist activity. It happens in the house. It's poltergeist. If it happens in the woods, they say it's Bigfoot. People get stones thrown at them. If you can look at poltergeist encounters, very often people will talk about stones being thrown in the house. They will get stones thrown at them inside their house, and they pick them up and they're warm. Now, Bigfoot, that happens in the Bigfoot world. People say, oh, Bigfoot was holding this in their hand, in his hand, and that's why it's warm when I picked up the stone Bigfoot threw at me. But it happens in houses all the time. And people pick up these stones that come out of nowhere in their houses during these poltergeist fits. And they're warm when they pick them up. I mean, this, people talk about it, bad smells. You know, they'll describe it as like sulfur-like bad smells, just like people talk about with Bigfoot, except it's inside the house. And so a lot of this Class B stuff, what people are talking about with Bigfoot, seems to be just poltergeist activity in the woods. But also, yes, people are experiencing poltergeist activity in their houses while they're having Bigfoot stuff, or ghosts even, while they're having Bigfoot on their property. It's, you know, this compounding of paranormal activity or events that seems to accompany this stuff.
Like the orb association with the Bigfoot also.
That's super common. So if I get called out to somebody who's like said they have Bigfoot on their property, I take the report and I try not to lead the witness. I get them to tell me everything about Bigfoot. Where'd they see it? How tall is it? You know, what were the weather conditions? Where's the nearest creek? I try to get all the normal information that any other Bigfoot guy would get from. When they're done telling their story, I ask one more simple question. I say, what else weird has happened around here? And they'll say, not 100% of the time, but probably better than 80% of the time, they'll say, well, my house is haunted. And then they'll tell me that story. Or they'll say, well, you know, I saw a UFO, you know, right over that cornfield over there. So it's, you know, I'm not leading the witnesses into this. This is something, you know, people are experiencing this stuff, and they're experiencing these multiple phenomena.
One unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand, and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Think, because I've sort of thought this, and so I want to get your take, because, you know, like Jason and I are, and the other guys on the are on the podcast, other than the judge, because he seems to have all kinds of crazy stuff happen to him, but you know, we're more of enthusiasts than researchers. We love to talk about it and read about it, and you know, but we're not out there every day, every week, in the, you know, doing research like you obviously are. So how do I want to put this? The UFO stuff with Bigfoot, have you come up with a correlation to that, or do you think it's just a coincidence, or that there's definitely a tie-in at some level with that?
The way I put it in my book is, how weird is it for anyone to see Bigfoot? How unusual, how rare? And then how rare is it for anyone to see a UFO? And then when you're telling me that someone's seeing Bigfoot and UFO either at the same time or in the same place within a couple of days of each other, that's way too much to be a coincidence in my book. How they're related, I can't tell you. I'm not going to make a guess. I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, Bigfoot's flying around in UFOs or anything like that. I don't know is the short answer. But it's just too much to me to ignore. I can't ignore those two things. When I first got into it, a lot of the Flesh and Blood Bigfoot guys who've been, you know, doing it since the 1970s told me, oh, yeah, this weird stuff happens, but it rarely ever happens, so ignore it, is basically what they were saying. But I couldn't ignore it. There's too much of it to ignore. How can you ignore that when all of these Bigfoot reports in Pennsylvania have UFO reports with them? I mean, thank goodness there's people like Stan Gordon who've been documenting this stuff since, you know, forever, since I was a kid. Yeah. And I love Stan to death. Not just for that reason, but because he's just a cool human being. I really like him. But thank goodness he's been documented, because we can go back and look at his reports, you know, back into 73 and even a little bit earlier, where he was documenting the stuff where people were seeing these, you know, big hairy things and, you know, saw a UFO either at the same time or right around the same time within a day or two in the same place. So it's to me, it's too much to be a coincidence, but I can't tell you what the connection is, because we really don't know what UFOs are. I don't think they're little scientists from another planet. I don't know what they are, but, you know, we don't know what they are. Anybody who tells you they know what they are, they need to provide proof. And we don't know what Bigfoot is, honestly. And anybody who tells you they know what it is, they need to provide proof. You know, we can make guesses. We can say it acts like an ape. It acts like a primate. It acts like a hominid, but we don't know what it is. So I can't tell you that why there's a connection, but I can only say, like, I feel like there's definitely a connection. They're definitely being seen, you know, at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do. So I know a lot of times when we first really got, you know, head started the podcast, and it would seem like if somebody saw one thing, it kind of almost in our minds opened the door that they were allowing themselves to be open to seeing anything. Okay. But now it almost seems like, you know, hearing some of what you're saying is all this stuff may just be in conjunction anyway. It may not be separate events. They all might be tied together. So it's not a matter of, well, if I've seen a UFO, then my mind is open to the prospect of experiencing a ghost or experiencing a Bigfoot. It's, it's the fact that maybe they're all tied together, you know.
It's hard for me to separate them anymore. It really is, because, you know, there's so much crossover between these different things. And I know it sounds like I'm copping out when I'm, you know, I refuse to say like, oh, Bigfoot's interdimensional. But it just goes back to, again, like we don't know what it is. And I don't even know if we know exactly what interdimensional means. You know, it's fun to think about that as a possibility, but who knows? We don't know what
is it really. Is it really fun to think about that as a possibility? I mean,
it is.
I mean, I'm three episodes into the latest thing of Stranger Things. There's nothing fun about what's going on in that. You know what I'm saying? And that's another dimension. Everything comes over from that dimension into Hawkins is nothing seems very much very fun to think about. So hopefully that's the best. Maybe that's the worst, because to me it doesn't seem like Bigfoot and UFOs are all the time malicious, at least, you know.
No,
it doesn't sound that way.
No, there seems to be a vast ecosystem of things with all different types of demeanor out there. Sometimes they seem really angry and really mean, and sometimes they seem humorous, and sometimes they seem indifferent to us. So the problem is, I guess you never know what you're going to get.
Well, it's just like people. Sure. people seem surprised when they go out there and they have different, you hear different experiences, but it all depends on if you catch somebody on a good day, or if you're in their back, really in their backyard, or you caught them doing something they weren't supposed to be doing, that's just people. That's the human aspect, I think, of these creatures, is that they're unpredictable, because people are unpredictable. Yeah. I mean, I think they're unpredictable in a way, in a human way, not an animal way, is the way it seems from the reports that I hear, Go ahead, Jason.
No, I was just going to say, I wanted to elaborate on that a little bit. Yeah, you're absolutely right. One of the things we can all agree on, regardless of whether you're on either side of the fence or whether they're being supernatural or whether they're a flesh and blood animal or something in between, every account that we've heard on our show and on other shows, there has been signs of some type of intelligence. Nobody has described Bigfoot without being awed by the presence, or by the it's like they exude this intelligence. Some people even claim that telepathically they're being communicated to.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it is, I mean, so if it is a natural creature, a flesh and blood thing, it's right. Got to be super smart to stay hidden for so long,
Yes.
And it certainly seems to express intelligence, if it's not a human-like intelligence, it's almost like an alien intelligence. And by that, I don't mean it comes from another planet. I mean it's so different from us that it reacts in ways that is literally alien to us sometimes. But again, like you said, it seems to be very intelligent, no matter what it is, and interested in us, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, which may be its biggest mistake. Very interested in this. And the one book I saw that you had written was a collection of stories and reports and newspaper articles from all the way back into the 1800s.
Yeah.
Now, how does that go in? So those reports now are more of... Do you think people were seeing a Bigfoot type creature every time, or there were quote unquote wild men out there, people that just were living off the grid that, were
right.
Hermits or
scrap. Right. So that's the issue. When someone says wild man in these old articles, it could be, just a mountain man that wandered into town. And, guy, long hair and a beard, and they're like, it's a wild man, could be a guy that escaped from jail and he's, raising hell. And they're like, he's a wild man. So part of it's the context of the article. Part of it is following up on the article. So if somebody sees we saw a wild man outside of town, and then you go forward in the newspaper a couple of days and are like, hey, Sheriff Brown caught the wild man. He's in jail now. And, you know, and he's, his name is Bob Smith or whatever it is. You know, you go, okay, that was a person. Some of them are, you never get that. And you go, well, okay, that could be either. And when I do those books, admittedly, I like the stories of the crazy guys too. So I cast a broad net. And, if I can't find that follow-up article that says, like, you know, yeah, definitely that was a guy, you know, he ended up in jail, or they discovered it was just an old miner or whatever. If I can't find that follow-up article, I'll tend to just throw it in and just, like, leave it up to the reader. You know, okay, you decide, was this a Bigfoot, was it not? But some of these articles, they're talking about, you know, 8-foot-tall things covered in hair. You know, I'd say certainly they're talking about what we call Bigfoot today.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to ask you then, well, most notably, as you find these newspaper articles, there's not a comment section down at the bottom where everybody's throwing their 2 cents worth in, right? Not like today on if you put that article.
Oh, that would have been so Facebook. Wonderful if we would have had that back in the day.
Because you're talking in the mid 1800s, there's no frame of, they didn't know what gorillas were.
Right.
Really. Okay. So it wasn't like anybody was describing and saying it looked like a gorilla or it looked like a monkey, because they didn't really know that frame of reference. But how many times in those articles does somebody say, well, it looked like a bear on 2 feet?
You get that sometimes.
Do you get that? Okay.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was a bear, but it was, you know, it ran on 2 legs and it, you know, whatever. But it had red glowing eyes or whatever. You know, they called him wild man. The really interesting thing is about that is they called him wild men until the late 1800s, when the mountain gorilla from Africa became known to the West. I don't want to say discovered, because the African people knew it. They knew it was there already, but it became familiar and known to the West. And they started bringing gorillas over from Africa to, you know, having zoos and circuses and so forth. And people started seeing photographs of them. I go, okay. And now they had something to call it other than wild man. So right around 1890 or so, and up until about 1920, they changed from wild man reports in the paper to suddenly gorilla reports. Now people are seeing gorillas all over Pennsylvania. Now there weren't gorillas in Pennsylvania. They tried to say, it escaped from a wrecked circus train. My wife happens to be a circus historian. She knows exactly how many circus train wrecks there were. In fact, we know exactly how many gorillas they had in the United States at any given time, because they were super expensive. They're like over a couple $1 million in today's money. So, you know, not that many people had them. Barnum might have had one. The New York Zoo had one. That was about it. You know, most of these traveling circuses didn't have gorillas. They were way too expensive and way too hard to care for. So when you start getting, you know, hundreds of gorilla reports in Pennsylvania in the 1920s, it's like, nah, they're not escape gorillas. That's not happening. So that's interesting. You know, around about 1930, it changes again. And they start being, in the papers, they call them hairy monsters. Well, what was happening in the 1930s? Monster movies. Monster movies are coming out.
There you go. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Now they're calling them hairy monsters up until, you know, the 50s and 60s, where you start to get Bigfoot creeping in. And then, you know, after that, Bigfoot and Sasquatch. So it's really, really interesting how it kind of changes in the newspaper. But the thing I like about them is the consistency of the reports. And that's what really drew me in about them. So if I'm reading a report from, you know, the 1860s, 1870s, and I see something like, oh, you know, this thing followed me home. You know, I was hunting. I took a shot at this thing. It followed me home. Now it knocks on my windows and climbs on my roof at night. And I go, whoa, because we're talking about, you know, you listen to Sasquatch Chronicles, you hear reports of them climbing on roofs all the time. That is a weird detail. And I know the people, these modern witnesses, these articles aren't easy to find. I spent a lot of time digging these articles up. They weren't going back and reading these articles before, you know, before I dug them out and published them. so they weren't going back and like, oh, let me go read these old Wildman articles from the 1800s so I can match the details in my modern report. I'm sorry, it just wasn't happening. So you have the consistency of these witness reports of these weird things, like, you know, knocking on the house or knocking on the windows and climbing on the roof and stuff, the way dogs react to them, et cetera, et cetera, the being shot and them either, you know, knowing what guns are by sight or, you know, having no reaction to being shot. Or like I said, like following people home after they shoot them, then people are basically harassed by the creatures afterwards. These are really, really interesting and kind of unique details. And when I start getting them in these old reports and then the same details are coming up in modern reports, that to me is just like, oh, yeah, there's something here.
That, well, what I'm really, you know, I mean, we keep talking about Sasquatch Chronicles because it's such a little known show. And he needs more listeners.
He needs our help. Yeah,
he needs it. Poor guy. When people will come on his show, and you know, and like I said, we have people come on ours that didn't even know in this day and age, like this week, didn't even know there was podcasts out there about Bigfoot.
Right.
And they're like, well, I didn't know, you know, and I started listening and I started comparing notes to my experience. And it's fascinating to hear that, you know, like they up until just recently didn't even know anybody else had seen one.
Mm-hmm.
And thought they were the only one that was crazy, which it blows my mind. And then to know, like, you've done the research and have these same stories for 150, you know, 160, 70 years, if not longer, you know, that's just crazy. I mean,
yeah,
it does tie it. The through line is amazing.
Right. Yeah. It's the consistency of behavior of these things, whatever they are, you know, over, you know, multiple hundreds of years. That is so fascinating to me. And it's like, well, yeah, there's something, you know, whatever yeah. It is. It's the same thing, I think, that people are dealing with.
So before everybody thinks that all you do is Bigfoot, because I want to ask about some other subjects that you touch on, what have you had any sort of experience out there that you would classify as a Bigfoot experience?
I'm real careful about that. I've seen something big in the woods that's too big to be in this part of Pennsylvania. And it was so quick that I don't know if I can call it Bigfoot, but there's an interesting story that goes with it. And it kind of weaves into a bunch of other stories of kind of high strangeness that followed it.
Well, this is not a circus train wrecking, is it?
No.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
So there's the area I write about in my first book is called Toad Road. It's not a road. It's an old towpath there's a creek, and it was the towpath for bringing barges down the creek. And just over time, it went from the tow road to Toad Road. You know, somebody misheard it or something, and it kind of changed into Toad Road. And that it's closed. It's private property. And no, it's not any place where people should be hiking. And I've made it one of the places I visit somewhat frequently. And I went there one time with a friend of mine, and we had hiked about, I don't know, either half or three quarters of the trail, whatever it was. We didn't do the whole thing for whatever reason. He wanted to turn around. It's an out and back thing. You kind of got to go out and back. And for whatever reason, he wanted to turn around before we had done the whole thing. And I said, okay, but let's come back and do the whole thing next week, because I'm weird. I'm a weird completist like that. I have to do the whole thing. It's like an obsession for me. I have to hike the whole way through. So on the way out, two strange things happened. Number one, we ran into what they call the wall of stink. I don't know if you've heard Bigfoot witnesses talk about this. It's just a big wall of stink, like about 2 feet wide. You can walk into it, smells horrible, and you can walk out of it. And you don't smell it until you walk into it. You don't smell it when you walk out of it. You can turn around and walk back into it and smell it again. It is the most bizarre thing. And we're sitting there, you know, just over and over doing this. I'm like, check this out. You know, you can walk into it and walk out of it, and pretty amazed by that. And a few, you know, feet from there, I found in the middle of the trail a raccoon skull, perfectly clean. And now I could have stepped over that on the way in. It's possible, but it's highly unlikely. And I'll tell you why. I've collected skulls since I was a little kid. I loved them. I loved to draw them. I've always, you know, always on the lookout for them. I'm kind of tuned to them in the woods. I find a lot of them. And the fact that I would have walked, just stepped over that thing, seems very unlikely to me, but maybe. Anyway, I pick up this raccoon skull, made plans to come back in a week. And the week comes, my friend couldn't go. It's like, okay, let's try next week. Second week comes, he couldn't go. Okay, third week comes, he can't go. I'm like, forget it. I'm going out by myself. I'm going to do it by myself. By this time, it's kind of into April. It was like kind of March the first time we went. Now it's into April and stuff's really growing up here. It's getting, the trail gets real nasty, and it's not a fun hike. This isn't any place anyone's hiking for pleasure. So I go back, and I'm in about the same place where I found that raccoon skull, and I'm headed south, and I hear something ahead of me in the brush, and I look up, and just for a second, I see something really big just shoot. So it's going the same direction I am. It just shoots away south, right through through the brush. And my first thought when I saw it, and this is really bizarre, my first thought when I saw it was like moose. Not because it was on four legs, but because it was moving in this really awkward way. And I'd see the moose in Massachusetts in the woods. And they have a different gait than deer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, was that moose? And it was, you know, that's the first thought that came to my head, like moose. And of course, it's like there's no moose in Pennsylvania. It's absolutely impossible, especially not in southern Pennsylvania. So not out of bravery, I don't know what came over me. I shot off after this thing as fast as I could go without even really thinking. Now I'm out there a lot, but I'm not going to chase this stuff. You know, if it comes to me, that's one thing. I'm not running after this stuff. I'm not one of these guys like, yeah, if I hear Bigfoot, I'm running for it. No, I'm happy to see what happens, you know, but this day, for whatever reason, I just took off and I headed as fast as I could in the direction that this thing went. And, you know, probably followed it for, I don't know, a quarter of a mile, half a mile, whatever. And suddenly right there in the middle of the path at eye level, and it wasn't there when I was there a couple weeks before with my friend, was a deer skull impaled on a branch right in the middle of the trail at eye level. And it stopped me in my tracks. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, what was that, a warning? That was a warning. I don't think I didn't feel like it was a warning. I don't know what feelings are worth, but for whatever they are worth, my feeling was, it was like, oh, you like that little raccoon skull, did you? Well, I'm going to give you something you're really going to like. That's the feeling I got from this thing. Now, could a human have come down there and impaled down a branch? Sure. There shouldn't be any people in there. And like I said, this isn't a place where people are hiking for fun. It's not a fun, you know, hiking trail or anything like that. It's pretty nasty down there, especially when it gets overgrown. But that was really odd, and that kind of stopped me in my tracks. I put that deer skull in my pack and took it home with me, as I did the raccoon skull. But that started a series of events where I'll say 70%, but it was probably more like 85%. Of the paranormal calls I went out on, so somebody called me, they saw Bigfoot on their property, I would find skulls. This went on for probably 2 years, where I found skulls. I'm not digging around for them. I'm not like, you know, digging under bushes. For instance, a guy saw him on two Bigfoot on his property or across the pond. He wouldn't even go across the pond. He called me, saw him the day before, and I was able to get out there the next day. I was like, I will be there tomorrow. So he wouldn't go to the area across the pond where he saw me. He's like, I'm not going over there. I was like, all right, I'll go over. I said, I'm going to go across the pond. I'm going to raise my walking stick. You tell me how tall they were. You tell me to stop where they were standing, et cetera, et cetera. I go across. He says, okay, stop there. That's where they were. And I raise my walking stick. He's like, okay, they're about that tall, you know, about 8-9 feet tall. And after, you know, we do all this, I look down right where he said the creatures were standing. There's just perfectly clean deer skull just sitting there. stuff like this happened again and again. Like I said, I've been collecting skulls my entire life since I was a little kid. In those 2 years, I found more skulls, many, many more skulls than I had collected in my entire life before. It's like they were just coming out of the woodwork to me. It was insane. It was crazy. My daughter, she's not much into the paranormal, but she likes skulls, and she was overjoyed. It's like, I'm just bringing skulls home left and right. But it was a very weird series of events, and like I couldn't go out on a paranormal thing without finding a skull there for, you know, most times for, like I said, about 2 years. It's died down now, but it was pretty incredible.
You know, I don't know what's going on in a house of yours, but it sounds like a pretty fun time.
That was extraordinary. That story. You know what? I know I wasn't there, but I'm sitting here visualizing this as you're telling the story, and I'm like, that's Bigfoot. It's got to be. I'm convinced.
Timothy, the first thing I was thinking is that they're saying, okay, you like the raccoon skull. Here's a deer skull. Guess whose skull is going to be next? If you don't stop chasing. Like, that's what I'm picturing.
Another really weird thing happened. So, like, this goes on and on and on. And it was right before the pandemic, literally right before the pandemic. This was like the day before they shut everything down. I was back out on Toad Road again with my buddy Chad. He's my main research partner. And we're hiking there. And the trail had been really wet. We kind of had to get up on this ridge and kind of get around this one part of the trail. It's just way too muddy to hike, because it's right alongside a creek. And I get up on this ridge, and as we're coming down from this ridge back to the trail, there's a skull, and I see the skull, and I'm like, what the heck? Oddly enough, there was a mylar balloon about 2 or 3 feet from the skull, which is a whole other thing, like the mylar balloons that people are finding with this stuff. But that's another story for another time. But anyway, see a mylar balloon 4 feet away. I see a skull. I'm like, oh, look, there's a skull. I pick it up, and I'm like, that is a weird looking skull. And I was like, no, that's a pig skull. And I'm looking at it, and it's got a small caliber hole in the skull, like a 22 or something. Like, oh, and this would mean nothing to anybody else but me. This is the weird thing. There was a story I found about Toad Road, and I don't think I published it in my first book, about two kids who were out there, and they were slaughtering pigs with a 22 pistol. And one of them dropped the pistol and shot himself above the heart. I think he killed himself. And here I find this pig skull with this small caliber hole in it. I'm like, you have to be kidding me. Like, it means, like, I don't know if that's the skull or not, but it just blew me away. Cause I'm like, no one else knows the story about this, you know, like this is a story from 1909 or something I dug out of the newspaper. I'm like, what the heck? It's because a pig skull with a small caliber hole. And I tell Chad, and I'm like, you know, he's used to me having these, you know, revelations like this. I'm completely blown away. We go up, we do the whole trail, you know, and we're coming back in the same area. And Chad takes a step off the trail. I don't know if he was urinating or what, but for whatever reason, he just had to step off the trail. And he starts laughing, and he comes back holding another pig skull. It was so weird. It was just the weirdest day. And there's not, we don't have wild boar in this county. So, you know, I don't know what that, and there's no pig farms near there. There's no farms at all near there. So I can't imagine what these were.
Wow.
I guess the moral of the story is there's never a dull moment in the woods with Timothy Renner. No, wait a second. You mentioned balloons. Mm-hmm. So there's balloons. Oh gosh. Is this a whole nother, like, crazy? Well,
we had this, okay, there's this whole other thing, area called Pandemonium, which is up in Tuscarora State Forest. And we went there. And we went there because it was a ghost town, and there were ghost stories associated with this place. So, you know, we went there for the podcast. So I said, hey, let's do a story about Pandemonium. I thought we were going there for ghost stuff. We decided to camp out there. At about 3:30 in the morning, I'm woken up by tree knocks about maybe 50 yards from my tent. They sound like baseball bats. bang, bang, bang. I had the presence of mind to hit record on my recorder. I actually recorded them. And I'm sitting there listening to them. And I'm, you know, like freaking out at this point because I can hear Chad snoring in his tent. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this is going to be one of those times where, like, I don't know if you've heard, you know, the stories where people can't wake other people up, you know. I'm like, I'm going to have to deal with this by myself. Chad's not waking up. Luckily, you know, a few minutes go by and he goes, "What? Do you hear that?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, I've been hearing that. That's wood knocks, man." We got up and had this pretty harrowing night with things kind of walking around our campsite all night. It was pretty crazy. But on a return trip, and there's a whole other story. It's really too long to get into. There's a whole other story that I don't know if you know Tobe Johnson from Strange Brow Radio.
No, I do not.
Okay. So he's had a whole bunch of this weird Bigfoot stuff with like apports and all kinds of weird stuff. And he had sent me a bunch of stuff. We decided to do this experiment. I'm like, hey, let me send you a bunch of stuff that I feel was quote unquote gifted to me. You send me a bunch of stuff that you feel was gifted to you. And then let's re-gift them. Like, so I'll put the stuff out. He's in Oregon, I think, or Washington State. He's in Washington State. I said, I'll put the stuff from Washington State out here in Pennsylvania. You put the Pennsylvania stuff out there and let's just see what happens. Let's see if anything weird happens. So one of the things he gave me was a little cedar ball. And I put up in the cemetery there at Pandemonium. So all this weird stuff happens. We go up and check in the morning. I put the cedar ball there the night before. In the morning, the cedar ball is like balanced on the very end of this rock. Like it had been moved out to like impossibly balanced on the end of this rock. It's crazy. And I'm driving home from that. And I get this call from Tobe and he's like, hey, do you still have that cedar ball? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, and I thought he kind of wanted it back. Cause part of our agreement was like, I was going to put it out in a place that was nearby so I could check it regularly and update him to see what happened. Well, Pandemonium is about 2 hours away from me. So I thought, oh man, is he asking for this back? Like, so I was like, why are you asking? He's like, cause one just appeared outside my house. I was like, are you kidding me? He's like, no. So I was like, all right. I said, I'm going to go back up and I'm going to check that. Oh, you know, I said, I don't know if I'm going to get there. This was like Monday, I think. So I'm going to go up on Friday. I don't know if I can get there before then. I'm going to go up on Friday and see if it's there. So go back up on Friday and it was there at the cemetery. So I don't know what that means, but it was very, very odd that he just calls me out of nowhere and says he had the cedar ball appear outside his house after that. But when we were there that Friday, Chad sees something in the woods out behind the cemetery, Pandemonium, and he takes off after it. And I was with his son. His son was with us. I think his son was like maybe 10 or 12 at the time. I didn't want his son to get scared. I didn't want to, like, I can't run off after Chad and leave his son either, right? So I'm kind of hanging out with his son and we're kind of slowly following Chad. And eventually Chad stops and, you know, I catch up to him. I was like, what did you see? And he's like, I don't know. I saw something on two legs running through the woods. You know, he's like, and he just followed after it. And right where he said it stopped at this tree. He's like, this is the last place I saw it. And right there was a Mylar balloon where he said it stopped. I was like, and I said, you know, some people say this Mylar balloon stuff is connected. Well, this was before this. I don't know if you've seen the documentary series Hellier.
Oh, I've heard of it. I've not watched it.
I've never got to see it.
It's a pretty cool series that deals with like the high strangeness aspects of the paranormal and stuff and a lot of synchronicity and stuff. Well, this was before season two of Hellier came out. Coincidentally, some of my music is the soundtrack for the last episode of season two of Hellier. They used some of my music for that. I think most of the episode is actually my music is the soundtrack. And but I had no insight. I didn't know what they were really doing, what the story of that season was going to be. But a big part of that season is finding Mylar balloons in these, along with these weird, like, synchronistic places, you know? So that ended up being part of it. But here we are, we started finding these Mylar balloons before this season of Hellier airs. And then we started finding them around places too. So it's just like, I don't know if it's a marker of something saying, pay attention. I remember reading back years ago that people saying like, oh, Bigfoot mark their territory with blue Walmart bags and Mylar balloons. I mean, it's complete insanity, right? Like who knows? But I do remember reading that like way back when. So I'm not the first person to come up with this Mylar balloon thing. But we just started noting like, hey, we start finding Mylar balloons around, and sure enough, we started finding them. And then that season two of Hellier comes out, and the Mylar balloons are a big thing in that. They started finding Mylar balloons around in these different places they went. So it could be coincidence, but it's just something we noted.
Oh my gosh. There's not going to be anything left, Jason. So Timothy, before we let you go, I wanted to give you a chance to tell our listeners. So this is your only chance, because I know you need the help for selling books, for selling books like Wes does for listeners. Okay, if you could recommend one of your books to get any of our listeners could purchase and read, knowing that it would hook them into buying every other book that you wrote, which would be the first one you would recommend?
I guess it would be Where the Footprints End, which is a bit of a not fair answer because it's a two volume set, but once they buy volume one, I'm confident they'll buy volume two.
That's a great marketing ploy. Don't beat yourself up over that answer. I mean, come on, that's a great answer.
No, so, that explores like all the weird stuff in connection with Bigfoot. And, I think I said in one of the books that, you know, it's a book that should have been written long before I wrote it with another guy, Josh Cutchin. We wrote it together, and it's long before we did it. That book should have been written 40 years ago, and I couldn't believe it wasn't. And I think it's going to be probably, you know, I hope it's not the single thing I remember as an author, but it may be the one, you know, as time goes on, that might be the one that people say, oh, that's the important one. That's the one I guess I'd tell people to start with.
There you go, everybody. There is your directive. Go get that first book, where the Footprints End. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, there's two volumes, volume one and volume two. You can actually start with volume two if you want. That's not like to be continued. It's that they work independently, but they do complement each other very well.
And I did. You guys were on Wes's show talking about that book, and I was just like blown away, you know, by the stuff. Just like I have been here right now, just hearing. It's just the wealth of information from all the research you've done and the experience, because you're talking about stuff that has actually happened to you. And I think that is kind of cool that you're out there actually experiencing some of the stuff firsthand and really doing a lot of the research.
Well,
out in the field.
It's never been my goal to be a scientist. I'm at heart a folklorist, which I like documenting stories. And I'd like to make the point that folklore is not fiction. Like if you read folklore, it's been fictionalized over time, but it's not fiction. Now, folklore is our ancestors talking about this same weird stuff. They had different names for it. But again, the behavior is very much the same as what people are talking about today with these weird things in the woods or, you know, ghosts or whatever they're talking about. John Keel was my hero for this stuff, and he never tried to separate himself. He just put himself right in the mix, and that's what I've always wanted to do. Like, I'm not trying to be a scientist and just document other people's stuff. Just get me in, put me in, coach. I want to be in the mix and see what happens.
I love that. I love that attitude for sure.
Yep.
And you're right. I agree wholeheartedly with the folklore and, you know, the stuff that the stories the Native Americans told, and even like the quote unquote fairy tales of Europe and stuff, that's all rooted in fact.
Yep.
You know? And like you said, sure it's been sensationalized or whatever, you know, whether it's by Walt Disney or, you know, whoever, the Brothers Grimm to sell books. So, you know, all that stuff is rooted in some truth.
Oh yeah. Sure. Yeah. I mean, so. to the point where I've had some pretty scary, we'll just call them issues. We don't have time to go into it with you know, something in the woods. And I looked at the folklore you know, just like basically tells you how to handle this stuff, how to deal with it. And it worked for me. So that's all I can say, you know, so it seems to apply. So like I said, I think our ancestors kind of figured this stuff out through trial and error, you know, hundreds of years before we ever did.
So let everybody know, other than going and listening to your fantastic show, Strange Familiars, where else can they find you and some of your work?
So most of my books are on Amazon. You can just look me up, Timothy Renner. My stuff should come up. The only book that's not on Amazon is I did a collection of my illustrations. That's called Apparitions, Illustrations of the Other. That you can get directly from me. I'm trying to get it on Amazon, but that's a pain. My other books are, you know, kind of published via self-publishing through Amazon. They have like a program, so it's easy to get them on Amazon. But this one, because it's an art book, I didn't want to do it that way. I wanted to have it printed up a little bit nicer, you know, printing. And I haven't been able to get it on Amazon yet, but I'm working on that. But anyway, that one you can get through me, as well as all my other books. You can find me at strangefamiliars.com. You can find my podcast there. All those links go to me. All the contact information there goes to me. So that's the easiest place. If you go to strangefamiliars.com, and anybody who wants to share their stories with me or talk about weird stuff, you know, I live and breathe this stuff. So I'm happy for all the contact.
Well, Timothy, I am glad. I got to be honest that we're talking to you and not Jeremy Renner or whatever. Okay. Because I think the conversation was much better with you than it ever could be with him. So I appreciate you coming on with me and Jason and sharing some of your thoughts and some of your stories. And I hope everybody goes and checks your podcast out and then starts with volume one of Where the Footprints End. And because it's just, I appreciate all the work you've put into this. Trust me. So,
thanks so much.
I think everybody else will too. So,
thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was our pleasure for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for coming on. Yeah,
absolutely. And hey, I'll come back too. I got more stories. If you want to have me back?
Yes. Yeah. Well, hey, we'll just have to wait and see if anybody liked it.
All right. Sounds good.
Oh, I believe they're going to like it. They're going to like it. All right.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much, Timothy. Have a good night.
You as well.
Yep. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.